Welcome to Behind the Headlines, the Friday morning Utah News Roundup from the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW. Heard around the state on Utah Public Radio, I'm Roger McDonough. Today, Utah's all Republican members of the U.S. House say that that President Donald Trump's second impeachment was a mistake that will divide the nation. Huge demand for vaccines causes the Salt Lake County Health Department's scheduling website to crash for a time. And the CEO of a Utah pharmacy is charged with importing a controversial COVID-19 medication in falsely labeled shipments. Those and other stories coming up on the show today. And on the phone for this discussion, we have Salt Lake Tribune reporter Aaron Alberti. Good morning, Aaron. Welcome.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. Reporter Lee Davidson. Hi, Lee. Thanks for making time.
Good morning, Roger.
And good morning to you. Also, editorial page editor George Pyle. Welcome, George. Good morning.
Good morning.
And listeners, add your questions or comments about the stories we'll be discussing by tweeting to @KCPW, or you can call us. The number is 801-355-8255. That's 801-355-TALK. Last week, we began this show talking about the mob of Trump supporters that stormed the U.S. Capitol. Details have continued to emerge about that event. The FBI has been pursuing those involved and has said that for some, this was more than just a spontaneous decision to raid the Capitol, that there was planning that happened. The Justice Department said earlier this week that it was considering bringing sedition charges against some of the rioters involved. Lee Davidson, government reporter, that storming of the seat of U.S. government while the elected representatives of the American people were in a joint session. You and I talked about that on the show last week. Since then, the president of the United States was impeached for a second time over that event, actually. And he's the only president in history to have met that fate. A historic vote, bipartisan to some degree, but the impeachment was a bridge too far for all of Utah's elected members of the House of Representatives, right?
Right. All four of them voted against impeachment, and they largely used the same reasoning. They said that it would divide the country and that this was just too much of a rushed process. Actually, I should clarify, because Chris Stewart has never said anything about this. He's kind of been radio silent on the whole issue. Despite many requests for comment, he just has not commented at all. The other three did. Burgess Meredith, who is, of course, a freshman and Burgess, a very strong Trump ally.
Just Burgess Owens. I thought I would jump in and clarify there. Yeah, go ahead.
I probably said the wrong name. I'm sorry.
You're fine.
Anyway, Burgess Owens said, again, that this was purely political and it distracts from what really is challenging the nation and it's just too rushed, and he wanted a more lengthy debate. The other freshman, Blake Moore, said without a single hearing or investigation, he just couldn't vote for impeachment. And he also said, as he listened to the debate, that it's no wonder our nation's divided. You know, he says, last week I thought we hit rock bottom, but he thought this week with a very partisan debate, Congress hit bottom. John Curtis was, he expressed anguish over it for a couple of days, but in the end he voted for impeachment, again saying, you know, we're just rushing here. And he says he had questions. He said, we're blaming Trump for causing the storming of the Capitol, but he's not so sure Trump bears the blame. He thought that evidence is emerging that this was planned well in advance, and he didn't think the speech just before the storming caused them to do it. They had already arrived with zip ties and plans and weapons and whatnot. He said, yes, you know, Trump's general push for saying he was robbed probably helped that, but he didn't think he was directly responsible for the violence.
Just on that point, we had a caller who just called in and didn't stay on the line, but asked, this is Chris from St. George, who asked, how come no one is commenting on Trump's direct marching orders from the debate? Proud Boys, stand back and stand by. And I guess the question is whether or not, I mean, whether or not those were direct marching orders. I don't know. Actually, Lee, I won't have you make a decision one way or another on that. But Has there been a lot of... Oh, go ahead.
During the debate on impeachment, there was a lot of debate about what Trump's words meant. He was saying, you know, we need to fight like hell. Republicans were saying, well, he's obviously, that's just metaphorical, meaning, you know, fight not with violence, but to fight to, you know, keep Trump in office. And the other side was saying, no, words have, it's pretty clear what he was saying. And so, you know, there's that divide again about what it meant. But it was debated.
Okay. Yeah, I guess you talked about the fact that Representative John Curtis was anguishing over this decision. I understand that, that Representative Curtis received a death threat, not for support, or actually for not supporting the president, not in this impeachment vote, because as you just mentioned, they all voted against impeachment, but in the vote that was taking place when the storming of the U.S. Capitol happened over certifying the election. Can you tell us about that?
Right. The vote that was going on at that moment was to accept the result of the Electoral College. The majority of Republicans voted against that, essentially trying to overturn the election. However, Curtis and Blake Moore were among a minority of Republicans who voted to accept the electoral results. And because of that, yesterday Curtis said someone left on his door a threat. We have a picture of it online. It has a headline on it that says wanted for treason. That has a picture of Stewart, but his eyes are covered with skulls and crossbones, which are, you know, a symbol of death. And then underneath the picture it says, for resisting the true electoral victor Trump and willful failure to stand to object to the corrupt and vitiated states. It also has a quote from Alexander Hamilton essentially saying, you know, elected officials don't do what they should, you know, residents have the right for self-defense.
You know, in asking the question, Lee, I said that the threat was for not supporting the president, and I suppose that sort of simplifies a bit. I mean, the vote was whether to allow challenges to the results of the American presidential election, but a death threat. I mean, this is, again, just a bizarre moment. I guess another question on this historic impeachment, Lee, it's, you know, it was quick. It happened after pressure was put on the president to resign. There was talk of invoking the 25th Amendment and removing him that way. This goes to the Senate next, where a trial will take place. What is the significance of that trial, and what is the time frame, Lee Davidson?
Time frame's uncertain. The current Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said he will not bring back the Senate early to start it. There's debate about whether they want to delay a trial or even have a trial at all. Let President-elect Biden get things moving with his new administration. You know, it would take two-thirds to convict the president, President Trump. After the fact, after he leaves office, what that would amount to is he would lose his pension, he'd lose his Secret Service security detail. He would lose some other things like his travel budget. But most importantly, it would ban him from ever running again. And so there may be a trial, and it would look a lot like the trial that happened last year this time.
Right. Though there may be more, I mean, given the fact that there were how many, 10 House members, 10 Republican House members who joined in the impeachment, there's also some expressions of support in the Senate, including,
And of course, last year, Mitt Romney was the only one to vote to impeach President Trump. He has also said this past week that President Trump deserves to have consequences for what happened, but he hasn't said exactly what those consequences should be, and he says that's being looked at, and they'll have more to say about that later. And Mike Lee voted against overturning the Electoral College, but hasn't said much more. He hasn't expressed an opinion on impeachment yet.
Okay. George Pyle, Tribune editorial page editor, the president was impeached for a second time for inciting insurrection at the Capitol. Just on the weird change of political winds and just how much different the country feels after last Wednesday, maybe I'll ask for your comments on that and on everything we've seen since, a week and a half ago.
Well, I think it's kind of outrageous, really, that some people are saying, some Republicans are saying, that we shouldn't impeach the president because that would further divide the nation. I don't know how we could be further divided than we already are. And appeasing terrorism, which is what any support for the president now is, any hesitation about impeaching him, censuring him, removing him from office, banning him from holding office in the future, any hesitation on that is rank appeasement of terrorism. I mean, what happened at the Capitol on January 6th is more threatening to the future of our nation by far than what happened on 9/11, because that was other people from other places who tried to bring us down, clearly failed for all the carnage of that day. And the people who are trying to bring our nation down now live here. There are apparently millions of people who voted for the president, although polls now say that his approval rating is very low and people disapprove of the uprising. A majority now want him removed from office. But, I mean, this is scary as all hell, and it is very much laid at the president's doorstep. I mean, he couldn't create all of this out of whole cloth. He's not that smart. He's not that powerful. But he's risen to the top on this, I don't even want to call it conservative. It's not fair to call it conservative. It's extreme right-wing reactionary. The basis of it is racism. The basis of it is white supremacy. It's not economic anxiety. It's most of these people have jobs or have pensions. It's fear of the white male patriarchy being pushed aside, which is going to happen, and they're willing to take violent action to stop that when they can't stop it.
George, meanwhile, there are these protests planned at state houses around the country. The governor of Utah, the new governor, Spencer Cox, has even declared a preemptive state of emergency over the protests. There's one planned this weekend by a right-wing group. George, I haven't looked at what the platform of the protest is, but the grievance must be the same as before. The idea that, for which there isn't any credible evidence, but the idea that the election was stolen from the president, which is also when you talk about threats to democracy, the idea that discounting of votes might happen is a threat to the democratic system. I guess, any thoughts on the planned protests and the continuance of Trumpism into the future?
Yeah, well, the idea that you didn't get your way, you didn't win the election, so you invade the Capitol, you invade the 50 state capitals, you threaten governors, you threaten legislators, you dress up like a bunch of Call of Duty cosplay buffoons, and except it's not funny because they're armed. And they have no understanding of how democracy works. They have no understanding of what's important, what our system is supposed to do. They are happy to take the protections of our system when it benefits them, but when maybe it benefits somebody else, they want to drag the whole thing down. Now liberals are once again in the position of rooting for the FBI, which is something that doesn't always happen, but apparently they're taking this very seriously. They're using the social media accounts of the traitors who invaded the Capitol to track them down and arrest them, and they appear to be very serious about it. Their dragnet has gone out across the country. They even arrested somebody in Utah the other day. They're tracing people back to their homes in Florida and Delaware and all these other places. And the FBI director, I think it was the FBI director, was very clear. He says, the FBI, if you were involved in this, the FBI is looking for you. And thank goodness for that.
you know, we could I think linger on this story for forever, but I want to turn actually, I guess this is the continuation or maybe the predecessor to this story, Lee Davidson, kind of the aftermath of last Wednesday, but also part of the aftermath of something that happened before that is Senator has to do with Senator Mitt Romney and Delta Airlines. Can you bring us up to speed on that? I mean, basically, there was an incident that occurred before the Wednesday event at the Capitol, and there's some fallout from that.
Yeah, actually, it was Tuesday. Senator Romney was about to fly back to Washington from Salt Lake, and on the flight and before, he was taunted by a lot of people, a lot of protesters, chanting things like traitor, calling him a worthless human. And anyway, they have now been banned from Delta Airlines. Delta announced that yesterday. There were six of them. They are permanently banned because of the way they treated the senator. Delta said, other than that, they also would have been banned until the end of the pandemic because they weren't wearing masks and had at some point refused to wear them. This morning, Delta's CEO put out a statement saying, you know, if you mistreat people, we don't want you on Delta and you'll be banned forever.
Sorry about that, Lee. I didn't have my microphone on. And banned forever, meaning you just never fly Delta
again. Banned forever.
Yeah.
Right. Can't fly Delta. This isn't a no-fly on all airlines. It's just Delta.
Okay.
And it takes some money for an airline to do that. There's legal costs involved, and there's a lot of work involved. So they don't like to ban people willy-nilly. You really have to be considered a bad customer to be banned.
And some of them, I mean, part of, I think, the rationale, I don't know if this is Delta's rationale, but definitely, you know, people complaining about, fellow passengers complaining about the fact that those who were yelling on the plane, a number of them were maskless during the pandemic as they yelled. And of course, you know, I guess elevating your voice is another way of transmitting the virus. Mm-hmm. With that, well, actually, George Pyle, any comments there? And then we're going to head to a break.
Well, I mean, in addition to this, we also are seeing several big donors and corporate donors are saying that they are no longer going to give to any of the people who voted to overturn the election results. That would include Owens and Stewart. And some big corporations are even, I gather, reevaluating whether they want to be in the political donation business at all.
Hmm. Another interesting sort of side note from the fallout of Wednesday and a new administration approaches. We need to head to our first break in the show. And when we come back, we will turn to the rush on vaccines in Salt Lake County and more. You are listening to Behind the Headlines on KCPW and Utah Public Radio, featuring reporting from the pages of the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Roger McDonough. We'll be right back.
This week in This American Life, growing up black in Russia, Elena always dreamed about who she might marry if she came to America.
One day, da-da-da-da, he'll be tall and black, da-da-da-da, whose song was that?
And then, visits America, which is less filled with princes than a person might think. It's this week.
Tune in Saturday morning at 10 here on Utah Public Radio.
They are telling members of Congress to shelter in place. They are evacuating members of the House and Senate.
An angry mob tears up the Capitol and the president looks on.
We love you. You're very special.
He's attempted a coup from the highest office in the land. That's what this is.
Making sense of it on the next Reveal.
Saturday at noon on Utah Public Radio.
Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough. I'm joined by Salt Lake Tribune reporters Aaron Alberty, Lee Davidson, and editorial page editor George Pyle. It's our Friday morning local news roundup, and you can call in with your questions and comments. 801-355-8255 is the number, or you can tweet to us. Our handle is at KCPW. Aaron Alberty, we are still in our pandemic reality, but people are, you know, of course, desperate to make headway to begin the process of leaving the virus behind, desperate to get the vaccine, that is. And on Wednesday, I think it was, Utahns aged 70 and older could begin scheduling a first vaccine dose appointment. And they did so in big numbers, and that caused some issues here in the state's most populous county. What happened, Aaron?
Well, on Wednesday morning, Salt Lake County launched its website to schedule appointments for vaccine, to get your vaccinations. And they also opened a phone line, a hotline to do that. At 8 o'clock when it opened, tens of thousands of people rushed the page to try to get their appointments, which overwhelmed its servers and kaboom, it didn't work for that long. They did get it restarted by about 9, but, you know, you have this large population that's pretty desperate. They got frustrated. And then a lot of people, because they couldn't use the website, went to the phone lines, and so many people called the phone lines that it crashed the entire county's phone system.
Wow. Okay. So crashing the phone system, what was the sort of remedy? I mean, people were frustrated, obviously, about the fact that they couldn't schedule their first dose of the vaccination. But did this get sort of resolved, Aaron?
Yeah. By 9 o'clock, they said they had got the website back up and running. They added a couple servers. And a couple people said they still had trouble later on, though we don't know the nature of those specific problems. And it took just a couple hours for all 30,000 appointments to be full. There are about 50,000 people in Salt Lake County age 70 and up. So, you know, this first round wasn't going to account for all of them anyway. But the intensity of the desire to get the vaccine appointments scarce, knowing that they would be scarce, was pretty astounding. They said one of the things that they really underestimated was the number of people who had enlisted friends and family members to try to log on simultaneously to secure one of those appointments. You had multiple people trying to go for a slot for the same person, and that really upped the traffic both on the hotline and on the website.
As you said, there were cancellation messages that people got. It turns out that those cancellation messages people can disregard. Is that correct?
Yeah, a number of people in later February apparently who had scheduled their appointments for later in February received emails telling them that they'd been canceled. And those emails were in fact sent by the county, but they weren't true. Their appointments aren't being canceled. We don't know how many people received that, but we did hear from a number of them, and my coworkers, Scott Pierce and Sean Means, talked to several of them, and they were concerned. You know, one of them said, for example, that it was a fraudulent email that somebody had sent out trying to deter people from going and getting their vaccine so that it would be free for somebody else. But yeah, there's been a lot of chaos around this. The way the state is doing it, every local health department is in charge of distributing the vaccines that they're allocated in accordance with their population. And so it's not every county, but each department is doing something different as far as how many appointments they're scheduling on a given day, and how they're signing people up for them. So, like, I believe Summit County is doing email. Wasatch, I think, is phone. That might be vice versa. There were a few that did online, like Salt Lake County, and just like Salt Lake County, they filled up all of their appointments almost instantaneously. There were some that hadn't started it, and when you go to their how to get a vaccine, it just linked back to the state, which didn't have any information about that. And then in Weber Morgan County, for instance, they decided to make hardware upgrades on Wednesday for the county's websites, which meant that the website didn't even open, but they weren't starting to offer appointments or make reservations for those vaccine doses until the next day anyway. They only have like 2,000 that they're signing up for right now.
Okay, so the biggest issues happening in Salt Lake County, it sounds like. Those issues were actually a good sign, according to Utah Governor Spencer Cox, because it shows that there's high demand for the virus. For the vaccine. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what he had to say about it, that it's a good sign that so many people are wanting to and willing to get vaccinated when they have the opportunity. Now the question is, will these hiccups deter them from trying again? Will they be able to kind of keep going back? For example, in Salt Lake County, now that everything's full up, that's based on how many doses they were told to expect by state and federal officials. That could change, you know, if any of the manufacturers can up their production, if they get leftovers from a hospital or something, if people cancel their appointments, you know, some of these slots could reopen. So they've told people to check back every week. Now the question is, will people remember to do that? Will they get discouraged after checking back every week for the next, 6 weeks or however many it's scheduled out and not getting an appointment still? And then also what it bodes for the future rollout of the vaccine, because this first group is kind of small. Once they start opening it up to right, more and more age groups, that's more and more people who are going to be wanting to sign up. And so the task becomes bigger.
And Aaron, just on that general, vaccine rollout plan here in Utah, how is it? I mean, if you can do the sketch on this, the sort of sketch plans for it, like when do we jump from, people who are below 70 and of a certain, and I know we're prioritizing age, but I guess what's the rollout plan? How do people who are eligible at this exact moment or in, once they become eligible, how do they sign up?
Well, the sign up, I think, will probably be similar to this unless certain counties or local health districts ended up having so much trouble with the mechanism they used for the 70 and up crowd that they end up changing it. Unless that happens, I'm guessing it'll be the same. But, it's been pretty fluid. I mean, initially it was going to be by profession, then age, and then teachers got kind of bumped up in the line. And whether, food service was going to be included. I mean, this has changed on like a weekly to daily basis frequently. So things that we heard a week ago now may not be being looked at. Also, the CDC guidance has changed. The CDC has put out recommendations. States don't necessarily have to follow it. But, their initial recommendation was very strict, only healthcare providers. And then when they did the 70 and up, one of the things they changed just the day before, on Tuesday night, they changed that to say, actually, we want to make this go faster. When we were restrictive on the healthcare side, it took a really long time to get everybody, and, vaccine was sitting unused for a long time. So instead of making it 70 and up for your first group, make it 65 and up. Now, Utah hasn't committed to doing that yet, especially, I think, in light of the extraordinary demand just among the 70 and up. We're not going to be able to get all of those people right away. So I don't have any indication yet that they're going to shift to open up this first round to people 65 and up, and even if they did, it wouldn't matter because all the slots are taken.
All right, and then I guess just in terms of, I'll bring George Pyle in on this in a second, but in terms of available doses of vaccine, are we doing all right there in terms of those who have signed up and having a supply chain that can keep the vaccine coming, Aaron?
So far, one thing that is shifting, the federal guidance now and, Biden has signaled that he will continue this approach, is they had been holding back on people's second doses so that anybody that got their first dose would be absolutely guaranteed to get that second, that booster dose when the time came. I think it's within 3 and 4 weeks of your first dose, you have to get a second one in order to get the full effectiveness of the vaccine. And they had been reserving those to make sure that nobody who got their first dose wouldn't be out of luck when it came time to get their second dose. Because the urgency to just get this going, has spiked, they've decided to just take the risk and go ahead and dispense all the doses that they have at a given time and just hope that, availability for that second dose remains and that all the entities that are scheduling these things can, be cognizant and schedule in and give priority to those people who really need that second dose.
Okay. And I'm just going to, I've harped on this before on this show and elsewhere, but just a reminder that immunity is not conferred immediately. You get your first dose, you get a little bit, two doses is required, and then you have to wait afterwards, something like 2 weeks, according to the health department, before you have the sort of maximal immunity necessary. George Pyle, vaccines, I don't even know what to ask you. Obviously, we all wish we could just flip a switch and this would be over. But, you know, there's patience and, of course, some bureaucratic processes to go through as well.
Well, the governor comes out and says that this is good news, that we're overwhelmed, and you think, oh, my God, how much of a sunshine optimist is this guy? But there's some truth in it, in that, I mean, you do want people to sign up. There's a little bit of a fear that in this country, with all this mistrust of government and mistrust of experts, that people wouldn't want the vaccine. They'd be afraid of it. They wouldn't trust it, and they wouldn't get it, and we'd have a big problem because of that. Well, now we know that there are a lot of people who want the vaccine, who are willing to wait online and wait on the phone and do all kinds of things to sign up and get it. So, you know, as they say, that's a good problem to have. What we need now is something that's beyond the reach of our state, of any state, and that's for the new administration to and the big pharma to get in gear and produce more doses.
All right. George Pyle.
And I would add,
sure, Aaron, thank
that,
you.
Sorry, I would add to that that, you know, the concern, I mean, there was a very realistic concern that people wouldn't want to get it. When they opened this up to long-term care facility employees, you know, kind of a fairly widespread survey that they conducted statewide showed that only about half initially were planning to get it. Now that went up and up as, you know, their coworkers signed up and, you know, didn't have any adverse reactions to the shot. And just, you know, kind of the social pull of, oh, well, everyone else seems to think this is okay. So, but there was, I mean, even among healthcare workers, a lot of reluctance to get the vaccine. Hmm. If you don't get, you know, 80% or so signed up to do it, then you don't have a real good shot at herd immunity for those who don't get it.
I want to bring in a comment from a listener who called in and said, this is Elizabeth from Riverton. She's 80 years old. She wants to know why there are only 4 hours a day and only one location to get a vaccine. Are there more than one location in Salt Lake County, Aaron, to get a vaccine, or is it all at the event center? I can't remember.
Well, I think that there were two, but they alternate days. And the reason that they're only doing 4 hours a day, and that's a good question. I had concerns as soon as I opened the page and saw that, too. The reason that they're only doing 4 hours a day is that they don't really know for sure how many doses they're going to get. They could get more than they've been told to anticipate. And so the idea is if they have it set up every day for that kind of protracted window of time, they can easily add slots to that window and expand the window. They can keep their staff there for a little bit longer. They don't want to make it only like a 1 or 2 day thing, and then people aren't available for those 2 days, and you know, 1 or 2 days a week, but it's 12 hours. They've put out slots for every vaccine they have. They don't have more shots to give. So, but when they get more, they can easily add it to, you know, whatever day comes next, and they've got their staffing in place, they've got the apparatus, the infrastructure all set up for that day's clinic, and they can just add to it.
Elizabeth, I hope that answers your question, and Aaron, thank you for addressing that. You know, before we move on to another story having to do with the pandemic itself, also with a controversial drug that was touted as a sort of miracle drug, I want to bring in a comment from a listener on Twitter. Lorenzo, and this has to do with a story we were covering earlier on the show about the siege on the Capitol last week. Lorenzo on Twitter brings up this idea that the siege was actually instigated by Antifa, something that the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, says wasn't the case. But Lorenzo writes, the claim of Antifa and BLM members provoking the Capitol protests is looking more valid now that John Sullivan, a leader of Black Lives Matter, has been arrested. Can we blame the Trump administration, or can we blame Trump for agent provocateurs? And this is, Lorenzo writes that this is the activist John Sullivan is reported on in the Tribune this morning. He's the activist who was arrested in Tooele. The Tribune has a story you can check out at sltrib.com. Lorenzo says that he's a leader of Black Lives Matter. In the Tribune article, Black Lives Matter Utah founder Lex Scott says that he is not and has not been a member. And he, according to some reporting, has actually been ousted from from some liberal activist groups for being controversial there. So I don't know what the that actually shows. I thought I would address that comment from Twitter.
Yeah, well,
George Pyle.
Yeah, Antifa is basically a right wing hoax. There are people, there are extremists all up and down and around and everything, but I think the one thing that is most important to remember, Antifa means anti-fascist, means you are against fascism. If you are anti-Antifa, you are pro-fascist. You know who was anti-fascist? Franklin Roosevelt was anti-fascist. Dwight Eisenhower was anti-fascist. Winston Churchill, well, he was anti-fascist in Europe and pro-fascist in India, so we'll give him a break. But it's basically an excuse, a phony way to try and divert blame from where it really belongs, which is to the right-wing, not conservative, far-right-wing activists and Donald Trump, the leading fascist in today's world.
George Pyle, editorial page editor with the Salt Lake Tribune. And I'll just add that Antifa is highly decentralized, according to law enforcement authorities in the United States, that it's not a specific group taking orders from anybody or anything along those lines. Aaron Alberti, a quick reminder to listeners that you can join us. Again, tweet your own comments to @KCPW, or you can call 801-355-8255. And Aaron, I want to stick with a story that the Tribune reported this week. Actually, before we do that, let's take a quick break. We've got to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will turn to the story of hydroxychloroquine and why it's back in the news. This is Behind the Headlines here on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. We'll be back in just a minute.
Programming on Utah Public Radio is supported in part by our members and Idaho National Laboratory, where scientists have discovered a new technique to eliminate the liquid waste created when converting salt water into a drinkable product. More information is available at inl.gov. You're listening to Behind the Headlines on Utah Public Radio. Stay with us. We also have UPR Presents coming up at 10 o'clock.
I pledge to be a president who seeks not to divide, but unify.
After a turbulent transition of power, Joe Biden now inherits many challenges in a divided nation. He's set to be inaugurated on the same stage where rioters overtook the Capitol. I'm Rachel Martin. Join NPR Wednesday for special live coverage of the inauguration from NPR News.
Beginning Wednesday morning at 9 on Utah Public Radio.
Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough, and I'm joined by the Salt Lake Tribune's Aaron Alberti, Lee Davidson, and George Pyle. It's our Friday morning local news roundup heard on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. Weigh in on what you've been hearing by calling 801-355-TALK, or again, you can tweet to us. Our handle is @KCPW. And Aaron Alberti, sticking with some coverage that you were involved in, a story that appeared in the Tribune this week. A pharmacy company that we've heard a little bit about before, Meds in Motion. And you know what? Maybe just why don't you just take it from here by reminding us why it is that Meds in Motion is a familiar name to us, and then why they are back in the news.
Okay. So listeners might remember back in April, there was a deal. Well, March and April, there was a deal developing for the state to buy first $800,000 worth of hydroxychloroquine, which was the malaria drug that President Trump had touted as like a miracle cure for coronavirus. The state had made a deal for already $800,000 worth of that drug with a Draper pharmacy called Meds in Motion, and they had set aside another $8 million to get this massive purchase that they would give to the pharmacies. Initially, this was going to be set up as a standing order that would allow over-the-counter distribution without a prescription of this drug. Now, the drug's been around for 80-some years. It's obviously been used a lot for malaria, also lupus. It does have some risks for people with certain conditions, especially heart conditions. So you have to get a prescription for it. And the state backed away from this idea initially of just letting anybody have it, but they still were going to move forward with this purchase. They'd been working with this pharmacy to bring in this huge supply of the drug. In early April, as details of that plan became public, and this drug was kind of quickly becoming pretty controversial. A lot of right-wing figures were promoting it as like a for sure miracle cure. There hadn't been any clinical trials done with it. A lot of the debate about how to deal with coronavirus early on was sort of a push and pull over how meticulous do you have to be science-wise in order to try to do something in a crisis. And this was a good example of that, that tension. Most doctors and the medical experts with the health department, a lot of them were pretty opposed to this, saying that, this isn't an approved cure for coronavirus. Any research that's been done has either been at such a small scale that it's not conclusive, or it's been anecdotal, just completely anecdotal. Mm-hmm. So wait for a clinical trial. Then, some larger studies did come out that showed that it either didn't have an effect or actually caused more health problems than it helped for coronavirus patients. So the FDA said, no, we're not recommending this for coronavirus. And at about that time, the deal unraveled. Apparently, as we've learned this week, also about that time, the federal investigators were looking into this pharmacy because they had learned, they say, that the supply that this Draper pharmacy was providing to the state, or was going to provide to the state, was from an unregistered supplier in China, and it had been imported in shipments labeled Boswellia serrata extract, which is an herbal supplement believed to have anti-inflammatory properties. So that those two things are illegal, and they have alleged that, the owner of that pharmacist, Dan Richards, did that. He's been charged in federal court with a misdemeanor count of receiving mislabeled or misbranded,
right?
Good,
right?
Drugs.
Yeah, and it's the sort of, I guess, common name of the drug you said is something frankincense. I can't remember.
Indian frankincense. Indian frankincense.
But yeah, falsely labeled drug shipments coming in. That's right, as you said, illegal. Just I want to actually go back for a second, Aaron, because you mentioned the how much maneuverability you have in in time of an emergency to be, do you need to wait for a scientific consensus before you make an $800,000 deal with the idea of renewing the deal to the tune of millions of dollars? I wanted to ask how it was that this no bid deal, the contract that Meds in Motion got with the state of Utah, how did they get that contract? Do we know exactly the sort of, I don't know, handshakes or winks and nods, or why them and not other pharmacies?
Well, they proposed it. The pharmacy, began pushing for this in early March, and there was a lot of support from some legislators, especially Stuart Adams, and so that's one thing that Dan Richards' defense attorney, Greg Skordis, has said that,
right.
It's a mitigating factor that state officials gave the green light to everything that he did, that they were pushing hard for this, that it was seen as very urgent, especially because once Donald Trump did endorse this as a coronavirus treatment, demand for the drug went through the roof. I mean, there was a nationwide run on hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine. So I mean, there was a dwindling supply of it to the point where there was concern that patients with lupus who use it were maybe not going to be able to get it.
Yeah, in this follow-up article, Andrew Becker, I guess who's a freelancer writing in the Tribune, reports that Greg Skordas, the attorney, says that the state of Utah, as you just pointed out, was okay with this. But did they sign off, Aaron, do we know, on, you know, the false labeling on the unregistered drug maker in China, you know, someone not approved by the FDA? Were state officials okay with those two aspects of this? Do we know yet?
That we don't know. We don't know what explicitly was said about their knowledge of that part of the import plan. And we also don't know, you know, any subtext of what was said either that would have indicated do what you got to do. You know, we don't know what was said. We haven't seen those. We do know from reporting that we've done, looking at emails between Dan Richards and the health department and other entities in the state government, that there was a lot of enthusiasm for this plan. I mean, these email exchanges going back and forth with all of this, you know, purported evidence of its success in treating coronavirus and kind of getting themselves more and more confident that this was a great idea and that this would, you know, save us from the...
For the pandemic? Yeah.
The swaths of super ill people, because that was the idea. It was basically keeps you from getting super sick if you get it. It doesn't prevent you from getting it.
Okay. Well, you know what? Let's bring in editorial page editor George Pyle. You know, there's two things. One is the emergency situation, but then also, I guess, the actions to try and fulfill the contract the deal you ink with the state of Utah during that time of emergency, and that might include this kind of bizarre methods to import the drugs. I don't know how to set you up, George. What do you think of all this story?
Well, kind of two things going on at once. One is we're in a giant panic. We haven't dealt with anything remotely like this for more than 100 years. We don't know what to do. If somebody says this might work, okay, let's get a bunch of it real quick. Because if it turns out it does work, and we didn't move quickly to reserve our share, then we look really bad and we feel really bad. On the other hand, you have this kind of feeling among so many people in our state government that a pandemic is first and foremost an opportunity to make a lot of money. Liberals say don't waste a crisis. Conservatives say, you know, don't waste a crisis to make money, to make bank on this thing. And we also have all the reporting the Tribune has done about how so much of this was run through the budget office and not through the Department of Health. I guess you can have some sympathy for the idea that pandemics are too important to be left to the doctors, but you know, a lot of these decisions were made on business considerations, not health considerations.
George, it's interesting because there has been reporting in the Tribune pointing to, you know, emails that the Tribune obtained on the governor's office of management and budget having a sort of outsized role in the pandemic response in Utah, and health officials having concerns with that.
Right. I mean, you have to manage this, and so you want managers, but it still strikes me as very questionable that the budget office took such an outsized role in this and, in effect, didn't trust the doctors to practice medicine.
Aaron, where does this go from here? I mean, we got to turn to our underplayed stories here in a moment. So what are we waiting for in the, court appearance, or what happens next?
There's a court appearance today, and we'll just see what happens next. I mean, now it's just going through the regular process. A misdemeanor charge. This misdemeanor charge can carry with it up to a year in prison and up to $100,000 in fines. So, I mean, it's not a small deal. It's still a federal crime, but you know, it is one misdemeanor charge as opposed to, right, you know, a bevy of felonies.
Okay. With that, thank you, Aaron, for your reporting on this and for covering it on the show today. We have run out of time. I urge everybody to check out the reporting at sltrib.com on that story and others. Let's turn now to our final segment of the show, the underplayed stories of the week. And Lee Davidson, we have not heard from you in a while. Let's start with you. What do you got for an underplayed story?
Well, actually, something that happened this morning. Joe Biden named Dr. David Kessler as the new head of Operation Warp Speed, the program to develop COVID vaccines and treatments. What's interesting about Kessler is he once was an aide to former Utah Senator Orrin Hatch, and Orrin Hatch really launched Kessler's political career. He's a former head of the FDA. He took it over as a relatively young guy when the FDA had a lot of problems, a lot of scandals, and kind of turned it around. He had served Hatch on as an aide on the Labor and Human Resources Committee. Anyway, just with that Utah connection, it might be fun to watch.
Okay. Lee Davidson's pick for underplayed story. George Pyle, how about you? Let's go to your pick for underplayed story.
Well, kind of three things that all come together as we change administrations. Several governments in Southeast Utah are asking the Biden administration to put back the full Bears Ears National Monument. At the same time, on its way out, the Trump administration is approving things like highways in St. George that will go through endangered species habitat and helium drilling, mining, whatever you do with helium, in federal wilderness areas, all of which may be a lot of ado about nothing if the new administration comes in and puts a stop to it.
Reverses those decisions. Lots of reporting by Brian Maffley on those topics at sltrib.com. Aaron Alberti, your pick?
George, you took mine. You took my Red Cliff Conservation Area in Washington County.
Sure.
I know every time I go third, this is going to happen.
Nope.
But I will also point you to a cool article by Kathy Stevenson about a wave of Hawaiian restaurants coming to Utah, why Hawaiian cuisine is getting such a boon in these days,
yeah.
And a lot of references to restaurants you may want to check out. I know I like to get that kind of food in the middle of winter. So
awesome. Some comfort food. I like
tasty,
it.
Tasty.
Check it out at sltrib.com.
Pineapple.
It's the pineapple. I'm going to go with another Brian Maffley story talking about a proposal that will be under consideration at the state legislature, a proposal to combine two agencies, the Department of Natural Resources and of the Department of Environmental Quality in the state. And that would mean that environmental regulators would be merged with the officials who oversee the development of the state's natural resources, a story worth checking out at sltrib.com. With that, I will just say, George Pyle, Aaron Alberti, and Lee Davidson, all with the Salt Lake Tribune, thanks very much for joining me on Behind the Headlines today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Of course, thank you. And that does it for Behind the Headlines from KCPW, a listener-supported independent public radio resource. You can find podcasts at kcpw.org or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Roger McDonough. Have a great weekend. We will be back with news of the first few days of the legislative session and of the Biden administration when we return next Friday.
Make an appointment with Public Radio's favorite family doc on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health. It'll be a jam-packed hour on healthy living, including this recipe for
winter pasta salad.
We always have a great time. So will you on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX.
Tune in Sunday afternoon at 1 here on Utah Public Radio.
I'm Kathy Lynn Jones, and I listen to Utah Public Radio from Mesquite, Nevada, online at upr.org.
Utah Public Radio is a statewide service of Utah State University and the College of Humanity and Social Sciences. KUSR Logan, KUSK Vernal, KUSL Richfield, KUST Moab, KCEU Price, KUSU FM Logan, also heard at upr.org.